Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have another fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favour to ask, and that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends, and don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey, guys. You're now listening to The Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy.
Right, guys, welcome back to the Coaches Network. I've got a very special guest with me today. My guest today is Professor Stephen Harvey. Good morning, good afternoon, Stephen, depending on where you're at. What is the time at the moment?
Yeah, good morning. It's 8 o'clock in the morning here, so we have to get up early because of children, you know? So you, no rest for the wicked, as they say.
I feel you. How old are your kids?
My 14 and 16. Always okay. Good to remember. It's a bit like when someone says, how old is your spouse? And you have to remember, you have to go, oh, remember their birthday.
You on that one.
Yeah, you did.
Okay. Awesome, awesome. Look, I really appreciate you taking the time out. Obviously, to be with me at such an early time in the morning as well. Maybe just a brief insight around who you are and what you do for some of the listeners, and we can kind of delve in from there.
Yeah, so I grew up in the UK, England, the North East, as you can probably tell by my accent. And so I was there until I was around 30. And then I moved to the United States to do a doctorate in exercise science at Oregon State University. Before that, I was working in we say in America, a community college, but, you know, a further education college in Loughborough. I'd done a PGCE teaching license at Loughborough and taught in some schools in that local area and in Coventry. So I have a physical education background. And then since getting my PhD, I came back to the UK, worked here at Leeds, what is now Leeds Beckett University and University of Bedfordshire. And then I got a job back over here in the United States because that's where my wife is from. So I was at West Virginia University and now at a place called Ohio University, where we have the only sports specific master's degree in the United States. So it's a master's in soccer coaching, as well as some other graduate degrees, undergraduate degrees in coaching. And we also have a physical education degree as well. So, like I say, mainly a background in physical education, a little bit traveled and things like that.
Awesome. Really appreciate you sharing that. And, you know, obviously part of the interest for me in terms of getting you onto the podcast today was really to explore your insights and your experience around the whole teaching game, for understanding, I guess, distinguishing that from what might be considered, I guess, in the first instance, constraints-led approach, but also a games-based approach. Because I think one of the challenges we do have, I guess, in this space of sports coaching is terms are so closely linked and so aligned, you know, so closely, labeled that they can quite easily be misinterpreted and misunderstood by many coaches who are trying to adopt certain approaches or one or the other. So yeah, maybe tell us a little bit more about, you know, what teaching game for understanding is and how that compares to some of the other approaches?
Yeah, it was a bit of a loaded question, that one. So I'll probably go back a step and go back to my background. So part of my background was going to Loughborough to do a postgraduate certificate in education. So like a teaching degree basically for 1 year. And while I was at Loughborough, I was exposed to, because that's the where Teaching Games for Understanding was born. They had a, as I've written about this, a games team that worked on really the practical nature of teaching games for understanding. And so I was exposed to it from a practical standpoint, and then used some of the principles out on my teaching practices and teaching placements that I did. And it just sort of fit well with the way that I saw how I wanted to set the classroom up in terms of physical education. And for me also, it got over a lot of the humps and complaints you get, where it's like, the old classic, when are we going to play a game? But you sort of give a little bit of what people want. And in phys ed, we had very short lessons, you're in, you're out, and depending on where you are. And it was just a way to provide an organizing structure to a lesson, and also think about an environment that you wanted to create more broadly, right? So those are probably some interesting things. So that's a bit of my background. And particularly what became a friend of mine was a guy called Len Armand. So he was someone who taught me like track and field or athletics at Loughborough. And he used like a really a TGFU, Teaching Games for Understanding approach to teach that. And and try and put us out of our comfort zone a little bit. And obviously in other sports, we use the TGFU, Teaching Games for Understanding framework. So that's a little bit of a background on that. I've used the term Teaching Games for Understanding a little bit, obviously, and I haven't said what it is. So in the early, late 1970s, early 80s, there were some publications after some this Loughborough Games team worked on this concept of teaching games for understanding. So it was the idea that when children come, we start the lesson with an initial game form. So what we do a lot of the time is when players come, and this is more like a physical education lesson, and I'm saying younger players, but it can be positioned with players of any age really. The learner was at the center of the situation. So it was like, well, what are the needs of the learner? And a lot of the time, the needs of the learners is they might need some technical competence, but they also might need to have a broader view of what is this game I'm trying to play? What's the objective? Obviously, to score a goal and stop the other team from scoring a goal. And how can we break that down into the things that we need to do to be successful, to score goals and to defend? So this idea was that you started the lesson with an initial game form. You tried to set that up to develop some type of game appreciation. So it might be something like, like we did in phys ed. I know this is soccer, so it might be just something simple like I play like 2-on-2 on the field with end line players that you either throw the ball or pass the ball into, and those end line players can move side to side. And the idea of that is in the players will play, and they'll develop some type of game appreciation of, right, what do I need to do to get the ball from one side to the other side of the field, or from one end to the other end in order to gain a point. The next phase was then you would develop some type of tactical awareness. So that would be where you would have to maybe intervene a little bit and prompt and ask some questions, guide the learner to think a little bit about what the objective is for that task. Yes, it's still to score, but there's obviously the layers down of how are we going to do that. So that's the tactical awareness. And then related to tactical awareness was trying to also, with questioning and prompts and probes, is to try and, like I say, guide them. So you were trying to obviously help them make appropriate decisions. So if I'm dribbling the ball at you and you step to me as a defender, I've got a couple of choices, right? I can go 1v1 or dribble to space around the side of you, and I can pass it to my teammate. Obviously, I'm not going to pass it to my teammate if he's standing or she's standing right next to me. If they move away from me, it leaves me with a 1v1, so I can attack the space and then maybe I can get my pass off to the player at the other end. So this type of decision making, you know, when do I shoot, when do I pass, when do I dribble kind of thing, and how do I do that in relation to the position of my teammate, the notion of trying to get the ball to the other end line player. And then from there, it was a case of what skills, technical abilities do I need in order to be successful? So I need to know a little bit about how to move off the ball. I need to have an awareness of what's going on around me. So we call this in soccer, right? Scanning is the term we use. We also need to be able to think about the ball and the contact on our foot to dribble. And I also need to know how to, you know, maybe do a push pass if we're doing this in a smaller space. Obviously, if it's a bigger space, I would need a more, you know, whole host of different techniques in my toolbox. So that was the skill execution component. And then you would then hopefully bring them out of a game. So something I did last night would just work on, you pass it to me from one end and I open my body shape up and then I can transfer the ball to the other side of the field. So it's working on body shape, to, you know, trying to get on the half turn. How do I do that? And what skills and techniques are there for that? And then it is a case of then hopefully putting the decision making together and the skill together so that we can, by going back to that game form, and then trying to look at improving my performance. And this is a cyclical process because, you know, it's like anything, it's not a one and done, right? So I've just sort of described a game and then like an activity or a practice or a drill, if you like, that we could do to work on some technical components with not a lot of pressure, I may add. And then it's go back to that game. And, you know, if we think that that's going to get people moving and learning in one session, we're probably, you know, trying to fool ourselves. So it's this notion of then thinking about trying to develop that over, you know, a period of time to give learners an opportunity. So if we that's what kind of how a TGFU lesson might or session might look a little bit. And I'm probably being a bit curt with the way I've used it, but I took you around like that teaching games for understanding model.
Yeah,
it's a process that you go around, but the learner is always in the center. So you make adjustments to what you do based on the needs of the learner.
100%. And you know, there's so many different client questions that are buzzing off in my head that we can kind of explore further. And I guess the first one I want to kind of take you back to is like, you know, the way that in which you kind of described that format, if you like, that model, would very much be aligned to what some would refer to maybe as a whole part, whole kind of approach.
I mean, the way I described it, it can be, yes, and that could be one way you structure it. It's a game and then a practice. But yeah. I mean, there are some other people, and this might get to that part of the question that I didn't really deal with, is how does this differ and what's a game-based approach? So there are various game-based approaches. They're all a little bit of one in the same. They've been developed over a period of time because there have been people have seen this teaching games understanding model with this process. So the whole part whole or the game skill game, or what we say in the United States is now called play, practice, play, right? Mm-hmm. They're game-based approaches that have been developed off this similar idea of trying to go around this cycle. But the the play, practice, play is a simplified version of it, where it's, you know, we do a game at the start, we do a practice activity in the middle, and then we do something at the end. Sure. Now, people might say, well, what does that practice activity look like? And some people have said that could be a two-phased practice activity. So it could be you do something like, you know, a rondo, and then you do something very much like very drill-based, right? Get the ball, receive it, pass it to the other side. Yeah. So the rondo is, well, there's an argument about whether rondos are game-based, but if it's more of a directional rondo, I guess it is. So you could say, well, that would be a way, we would call the rondo like a game-related practice, and then we would do a skill-focused or technically-focused practice, and then we could go back to a game. So in that sense, it's still whole part whole, but the part's got a couple of parts to it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. It's quite interesting because I've been having a lot of conversation with coaches recently about the whole, the idea of, you know, using like a whole part whole approach. And you know, the challenge I have for some coaches around is the fact that I think in order to be effective and impactful with that approach, you've got to have a highly skilled and knowledgeable coach.
And the reason why I feel that way is because I observe a lot of coaches try and adopt this approach, but they've already decided what the part is before observing what happens in the initial stages of the whole, if that makes sense. And it then, you know, you might end up in a situation where actually what you plan for as the part might, or the part components within the structure might not actually align to the needs of the players. And then obviously that brings its own question as well, right? In the fact that the needs of the players and, you know, the learners in this case, are they really the needs? So, you know, what I'm getting at there is, are the coaches really, you know, examining the needs of the individual, or are they examining the needs of their want, if that makes sense?
I mean, we're probably getting a bit deep quickly, but even when I was describing the TGFU model, I was thinking to myself, hey, this is pretty complex, right? I mean, coaches or teachers have three things that they're bothered about. You're right. One is the player. One is obviously their knowledge, their content knowledge as a coach or teacher. So what you know about soccer, you know, what you know about the players, and then it's this, what do you know about how to teach these things, right? What are you, we would use this posture like pedagogical skills. A lot of this development would come from experience, but I think we are getting a bit closer to knowing what type of activities are, you know, in a general way, what type of activities might be good for certain ages of players. Yep. That said, to your point, there's never a, you know, sometimes we might have to have a starting point with an activity and then try and simplify it or increase the complexity depending on what's going on in front of us. But I think there's a juxtaposition with a game-based approach. And if we say a game-based approach is teaching games for understanding, or player practice player, or whole part whole, because whole part whole isn't a game-based approach necessarily. And that's another thing, because there are a few more things about it. Because whole part whole is just a sequence, whereas a game-based approach involves, you know, the use of different coaching behaviors, questions, sure, when to give feedback, how to give feedback, how to, you know, when to move from, you know, when to progress an activity, when to simplify it, and you know, and things like that. So, but I think we have to, the juxtaposition is we want to fit what we're doing to the needs of the learner, and as you outlined, then what we have to have a sort of a guide in our mind about where we're going with the activity. And I think this might be one thing that we miss with the game-based approach, in all honesty, is where is that coming from? So for example, if I have my team, hopefully we might have had a game at the weekend, so and then there's this juxtaposition of, do I do a, have some type of, for want of a better term, tactical periodization, right? Yeah. Am I working on certain themes every week? Well, and then how does that relate to the game, right?
Of course.
So you've got, I'm building a model for myself here. You've got this sort of like broader framework of the game of soccer, this idea of, well, what's the sort of circle of knowledge these players need at their age and developmental level?
Yeah.
And then how is this sort of contextually bound by where they're at in their development, where they are in that their learning, how does this relate to themes that I'm trying to deal, you know, deliver from a, you know, maybe a thematic approach in my coaching, but also how do I also deal with where the players are at from the game this past weekend and where we're going next weekend. And that doesn't mean that we have to have players win. It's just what we are trying to do is have them, you know, have an appreciation again of where they're at in their development, so that they get an idea of how to play the game, right? So there is a juxtaposition with what you're saying is where I'm going, and we haven't answered the question yet, but we can maybe get there. So you were going to say something?
Yeah, no, I was just curious, obviously, because obviously within that, again, it's just bubbling up so many more questions for me, and you know, I think might be of interest to kind of explore. And you know, the first thing that you said there around, you know, recognizing that it is, you know, whole part whole doesn't necessarily need to have be considered a games-based approach, but it can be depending on how it's been structured out, right? And that piece around recognizing the needs of the learners, and I think you made a great point that ultimately it will have a dependency on the knowledge of the coach and experience and the insights of the coach themselves. And I guess one of the other things I was thinking about as you were speaking there was that, you know, that periodization piece and that thematic structure that you might put in place, or a schedule of some sort, but actually then being able to manage the balance of that and then reflect that in alignment to what's been taking place within the games that they're participating in, right? And I think deeper than that is for the coaches to maybe consider, right, if, for example, you know, you've observed your team and they seem to have struggled to play out from the back, actually just look at, and I think this is probably where going below the surface, if you like, and recognizing what actually is that the challenge, or is it actually how the opposition prepared and approached us in a way which then challenged us on how we might play out from the back. And it might be that actually that misinterpretation or the misobservation of actually what's actually happening here, rather than just looking at our team, how is the other team participating and what role are they playing, almost what's the character they're playing in that scene, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, and this is this, I guess, the whole decision-making, you know, and you've got decision-making on the ball and off the ball, but this, you know, broader recognition of going back to where we started, the game understanding, right? And but the notion is that we, to get where you're saying maybe we need to be, we need to participate in the game, right? Like, for example, let's just have something even simpler. I mean, if you want to run a marathon, because it's something that I've done the past few years, you don't run a marathon to be able to run a marathon, but you do a lot of longer runs. You do, you know, various other different sessions. So, you know, when you've got the whole, but you do get better at running by running, is what I'm saying. You don't, you can keep your fitness by going on the bike, but really and you might be able to run a marathon having done a lot of cycling. That said, you're probably better doing more running than cycling to run a marathon. So it's this sort of like specificness. And I think that that's the thing about, you know, the TGFU or teaching and understanding is there is an approach there, but the mindset for me, and this was a mindset shift for me when I was exposed to teaching games for understanding, is I always enjoyed exactly what you said, right? And that's probably why I'm a coach, because I wanted to figure out, how can I solve this particular problem? And, you know, the whole notion of teaching games for understanding is when you have game appreciation and tactical awareness, you set a session up based on a problem.
Yes.
And that doesn't mean that it's a negative for players. What I mean by that is, oh, we've got all these problems and, you know, we're just not very good, so we have to fix them. You know, it's just this idea that the game creates what Armand would say, puzzles. And you know, we have to try and figure out how to overcome the challenges of this puzzle. And the puzzle, even as we try to work out puzzle, there's a sub puzzle within it, right? So like playing out the back, we've got to think about, well, we can play out the back and go from center back to right back and play into the center mid and then get it up front. But we might only be able to do that if the defenders sit off. Whereas if the defenders full press, well, what's the thing we need to do now? Well, it's, you know, we're seeing this in the Premier League, you know, we're adjusting because then teams are pressing a bit higher. Well, we're going to go more direct and play out. You know, we're still doing what we need to do within that tactical problem. We are solving it by we're building out. We just build because we're getting the ball over the half line. We're just doing it in a very different way. Now, the problem is that person who gets the ball who has to hit the ball needs to have that technical slash skill to be able to do that. So that again, that part of that is knowing where your players are at. So if you are seeing, you know, if you have worked on playing out the back to solve that problem and you've encountered a lot of teams that have sat back, what you might need to do is if you encounter this is say, hey, you know, girls, guys, you know, last week we did this activity, you know, what happened at the weekend, or this team did this, you know, so how I want to put us in a situation where we might have to overcome this. And then we, you know, we set up that scenario. You maybe coach the defending team to put the attacking team in certain situations. And then we have to recover. But where we are at with what we're saying is this is a very like high level version of, I guess, TGFU, teaching games for understanding, because, or a game-based approach. But the simple fact is we're trying to set up a puzzle or a problem, you know, like a breakout room or anything you've seen on TV when they do those, you know, game shows, you know, you set up a little bit of a problem and then you put people in the situation and say, right, how can we solve it? And, you know, young players are, particularly young players or players with less experience or earlier on in their development, they're going to have less tools and resources to draw on to be able to solve that puzzle. And we can help them by obviously simplifying the activity or the game, right? So smaller numbers, you know, certain parts of the field, whatever it is, less defense, you know, the attacker defender ratio, the notion of how we score, all these kind of things. You know, we have to factor all those things in order to devise some, you know, reality based, and I did air quotes there for people not watching, you know, situation that we can put our players in to help them solve that puzzle. The juxtaposition that we talked about earlier is we also need to appreciate that they may need some toolkit enhancement along the way. And that is where we can step out of this puzzle with the knowledge that, hey, what are we struggling with here? Well, we're struggling to hit a ball further than 15, 20 yards. And this is not to say that just by working on that with me and you for 15 minutes, it's going to solve that problem. But at least you're introducing them to a tool to solve that problem. And it may be, you know, there's an iterative thing here where we might need to do a little bit of that for 5 minutes, go back to the game, and then play a little bit more, step back out, work on it again, go back, right? So this idea of we use technical activities where needed, and that is then on the judgment of the coach, but this is a very high-level skill. What we end up finding is we have these, you know, cookie-cutter session plans, like set up a game, do this practice activity, go to a game, and when we've got young players or players in front of us, it doesn't quite work like that, right? And like you said, there's a broader thing about where are we at in our developmental journey? Are we playing in an academy? Are we playing, you know, for Little Joe's Sunday morning team where we've only got one practice a week and all this kind of stuff?
Well, it's interesting, right? Because, sorry to pause you there, just really make a really good point, but I guess one of the questions I was thinking, like, context plays a big part in this, right? In terms of what is the context in which you're delivering this session? And I know that you've referred to it a couple of times as a higher level approach, but, and again, I was having this conversation with someone recently, that are there concepts such as teaching games for understanding or the constraints-led approach and all these things that maybe to some extent or maybe be brought in too far down in the formal coach education pathways? Do you think they should be brought in sooner? Because I don't think there's much explicit information on it. And I don't know if it should be or should it be, or whether the, generally speaking, the coach developers are well versed enough to actually bring that into the education piece from earlier on in the stage of the formal coaching qualifications, if that makes sense.
I am following what you're saying. So, I mean, there's some little tips and tricks. So this lady called Linda Griffin wrote a very practitioner article. And one of the big things that she says, if you want to think about using teaching games for understanding or a game-based approach, then try and think game-like. And so I'm just saying this from my perspective, whenever I put or see something that I think my players might need to work on, or I'm thinking about that, you know, that concept or tactical problem, I'm thinking, right, how can I set up activities that have some type, you know, how can I make it a game? And I don't mean a game by, you know, what we used to do with the little kids, where it's like Simon Says and things like that, you know, Simon Says dribble, Simon Says pass, you know, kind of thing. I'm thinking more about setting this up in, you know, like a game would be, you know, like one ball, directional, things like that. So I always think, well, how can I set something up that plays this picture, but gives them an experience where it's not running around a cone, or where I'm giving them like technical feedback 24/7. Now I can teach and coach that technical, tactical or technical stuff within what I'm doing, but I think about how I can make things a little bit more game-like when I set things up. And I think that this idea of making things game-like is is maybe something where, as coaches, we probably default back with, and this is a generalization, to, oh, my this was breaking down, so I'm gonna, oh, my players couldn't hit a 20-yard pass, so I'm gonna start the session having them hit 20-yard passes, right? So, you know, a way we might practice that in an activity that's a little bit more potentially game-like would be, you know, create 2 3v1s or two teams of four, and then, you know, a team of four has the ball, and then you send one defender in and they pass it around. And when, you know, there's like a one grid on one side, one grid on the other, and then there's an empty grid in the middle, you know, and then you work the ball to get someone free to then hit the ball across to the other zone, right? So like over the river type of game. Now, would I do the over the river forever and ever? No, I might do that for 10, 15 minutes. If I feel that the players need to develop their striking of the ball, I might pull them out of over the river, get them to work in pairs, go back to over the river, and then put this in some type of, you know, reality based, right, where they're having to like build out from the back and hit that longer ball in a, you know, 6v6, 7v7 modified game with maybe a restriction or a hit. I don't really like the word, but to the point of constraints led, a constraint on the game, in order that the players see that picture organically, but in a, you know, but with my guidance, as in the way that I've set up the activity to try and encourage them to hit that longer ball, right?
Yeah, and I think that's the key word there, right? Encourage. And I think this is where the ownership and the option is still there for the players to make their own decision, but almost you design the game in a way where that is, like you said, encouraged, so that they might be able to get the practice on that. But I guess one of the questions that's coming into my mind now is, from your experience and your thoughts, is there, surely this has a direct influence on coaching behaviors and potentially even the types of interactions or interventions maybe a coach might make in this approach, or would I be wrong to assume that?
Well, I think any person would assume that there might be changes. I mean, we did a study where we looked at just sessions that coaches were doing, and we broke them down into the different activities, and we had some that were a little bit more, you know, what we call drill-based, and some that were a little bit more game-based. The literature says training form and playing form, right? So you can imagine things like where you run around cones, or you pass between two, or they're more, you know, drill-based, and they're more play-based is, you know, this, you know, small-sided game, condition game. Obviously, you know, at the end of practice, you might play some type of open game, 7v7 or whatever. So the idea with this study was to say, right, was the coach doing a more playing form practice or more of a training form practice? And then we looked at, well, what behaviors did they use? And there were very minimal differences between the behaviors that they used. Because we were surprised, because we thought there would be differences, but the idea of, well, when you're doing more player-based activities, would you ask more questions? Would you, you know, but they would still give lots of generic feedback. They would probably be a little bit more silent in the games, but there was this, when we asked them questions about, well, why are you doing what you're doing, they would just say, well, oh, they're playing now, so I'm just going to stand back and let them play. Well, mm-hmm. The notion is that the game at the end of practice, when you've done game school game, is a play form practice, there's still an opportunity to teach or coach within that. It's not a case of, oh, well, I taught them everything in the first 30 minutes of the practice, so now I'm just going to shoulder arms and let them do whatever they want. But at the same time, you do want them to have more expression. But some of that expression can come with the way that you set up the activities earlier on in the practice, right? And so to your question, we would think that coaching behavior would be distinctive between different ways that we, different practice activities that we do. But certainly with some coaches, it's not any different, because they do the same thing no matter what, right? They give lots of specific, you know, generic feedback, yeah. Super smashing, great, lovely. They ask the odd close question when they're doing it, you know, but they tell people what to do. And then in games, they do kind of the same, if you know what I mean. So it's sometimes it's not different, but we do need to have a little bit more of a a nuanced way of thinking about our coaching behavior when we are doing different activities, right? And sometimes, you know, as coaches, we don't plan what it is we're going to do from a coaching behavior standpoint.
Yeah, 100%. So, I mean, I guess in part of the reason why I asked the question, because I guess for me, when I, you know, I probably have moved over the years away from more a drill-based kind of approach, and really trying to isolate the technical pieces, if you like, and those components, whilst I'll appreciate the value that that methodology works, and you know, and the value that it can bring in terms of, I guess, the biomechanical piece linked to that. I think context plays the biggest part for me in terms of how often am I working with these players? How much time do I get to spend and work with these players? You gave a great example earlier about, you know, working in a school potentially and delivering PE sessions where the players are kind of in and out. And, you know, the idea is you just want to get them engaged and introduce them to the sport and potentially enhance their ability a little bit within that. But ultimately, it's more about participation, possibly in that context. Whereas maybe in a grassroots setting, it might be slightly different because they're there dedicated to play football. Although you'll have some kids who are not even there because of choice, because the parents have decided that's where they're going to drop them off while they go do their shopping. And then you've got the other end of the spectrum where you're in a more talent elite performance pathway, if you like.
There's a saying that everything works somewhere and something works everywhere, right? And so, or something like that. And so I think what I'm not trying to do here is paint a picture where everyone should be using a game-based approach or teaching games to understanding 24/7. And I don't, you know, we probably agree on that, right?
Yeah.
Similarly, thinking more game-like about what we do is probably something that we would all benefit from as coaches, right? How can we, to use a term from the constraints led literature, you know, be more representative with what we're doing? So how can and another phrase that I do like from that is repetition without repetition. So when that small sided game that I told you about at the end with two end line players and two on two in the middle, sometimes that is a starter activity that I do with my players, and that is repetition without repetition because it's a directional rondo to a large extent. And it can be modified and changed depending on the needs of the player. But what's the idea with it? It's getting them to get the ball from, you know, one side of the field, as in one end of the field, to the other, right? And so it's, 100%. You know, but depending on what the emphasis is that particular day, you know, we can then pull a piece out of that and then develop it. But, you know, if we're in that PE context, we could say, well, we just want to get them playing, so we're going to use TGFU. That said, we could take the mantra, like if you go to the rec context, it could be then, oh, well, we want to get them playing, but there are some techniques we need to develop, so we're going to do drill-based sessions. So, you know, but it will depend on if you got one session a week, two sessions a week, how can you set that up, you know, and things like that. And obviously more in an academy standpoint, you've got a little bit more control. The one thing I did want to mention was, you know, be aware of, like, is the thing we use in soccer is a game model, right? So clubs, particularly higher end clubs, they might have a game model. I know some people's game models are situated around these things called principles of play. So you have attacking principles of play, right, and defending principles of play. But these would really represent those tactical problems you could situate, right? So, you know, a principle of play would be movement and support. Mm. For example, one would be width in attack. So, you know, it might be that, you know, you have that emphasis of your game model about, well, you know, where do we want width on the field? Well, we want it everywhere, but are we trying to create more width further up the field? Or, you know, and there's obviously the extension of the formation and how that creates width, but the notion is we need width, which players get wherever is the idea. So situating for higher level people, you're gonna have to situate what you're doing with the players at a certain time within that broader game model, right? And then the other thing that I wanted to say was, in curriculum, when you develop it, there's like a thing called structure and sequence. And so there's the structure and sequence over the training week, over the training month. And this references back to the game model, you know, in that half year period, you know, whatever it is. And there's also structure and sequence in terms of what you do on that particular day.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays, decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa, got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments, Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels, Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition. Wayfair, every
style, every home. Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
And I don't know any research really that says there's this ideal structure. We just did a survey with coaches and asked them to put a structure down about how they, what activities they do in what order in a session. And we got 517 responses and 300 were different. We gave them 6 choices, you know, whether to, you know, do a little, something that was a little bit more training form or playing form. You know, so we had some that were doing more, you know, start with a warm up, then do a game, a small sided game, then we do an applied skill practice, then we do a game. But we have some people that go, I do a physiological thing, then I do a technical thing, then I do an applied skill practice, then I do a technical thing, then I do a physiological thing, and I finish with a game. But you can imagine with 6 activity blocks, you know, we had anyone can do anything. And this goes back to the everything works somewhere and something works everywhere kind of thing. But the idea of the structure is to go back to a whole part of whole. There probably is ideas of, well, when do we need to do the whole? When do we need to do little parts? But trying the teaching games for understanding idea is that we start a little bit more holistically.
Yeah.
To give them that experience to appreciate what is going on in order that we can try and dive into a particular tactical problem that has a particular set of skills that we want to work on so that we can improve game performance.
It's quite interesting, obviously, because obviously one of the things I talk about a lot is that certainly teaching game for understanding and these game-based approaches aren't necessarily a new thing, but they've definitely come into play a lot more in the last few years, and they're probably more prevalent now than they've ever been across multiple environments, right? And often explored the idea that is it down to societal change, like in the fact that I guess when I was younger, possibly yourself, we had more time to play games generally, and obviously the way the society's changed, it's become harder to access opportunities to play outside of a formal context. Therefore, the shift has been with that. So, right, can we start producing more environments or give them more opportunity to play? And there's almost been a decrease and almost a dial down on how much we focus on the technical piece. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
There's, again, like with anything, there's multiple things there, but I that might be an unintended consequence, right, of where we've got to with society. But I do think by setting up these situations where you've got a coach who potentially maybe what we would term a more knowledgeable other, or at least someone that can guide that exploratory behavior, right, that the players are going through when you set that situation up. And the situation that you set up is a little bit more, you know, again, structured and sequenced, right? So hopefully, but the challenge with that is that when you use more game-based environments in a coaching setting rather than it be completely free play, out jumpers for goalposts kind of thing, is that you've got the adult there and they're structuring it. And so then you are wanting certain things from the activity. You see what I mean? And you could argue, well, I'm guiding, but we can get into that bit of where I'm starting to restrict and tell them what I want them to do rather than maybe have them explore more or be freer to do whatever they want, right? So this is a challenge for us as coaches. And there was a thing in the PE literature, I think it's called the accordion principle. And you imagine an accordion, you know, you pull it out, it makes a noise, you push it together, it makes a noise. And you know, this idea of that spectrum is you've got to know when you need to like maybe squeeze it together and be a little bit more insistent. And then going back to coaching behaviors, and then you need to know when you can release it. But everything is situated within that, like you say, societal, cultural context. I mean, obviously football's changed more in the UK. I mean, it's changing over here in the US with a little bit more of our pay-to-play system and the changes that the youth soccer environment is in terms of how it's governed and things like that. But as you've got more academies and academies become sub-academies or clubs call themselves an academy, you know, and they're feeding into a certain academy, you know, there's a little bit more of the professionalization of soccer or football, right? So there's that side of things. And we then want to have coaches who are not just showing up and telling the kids, all right, you do whatever you want, just play, I'll stand here and not do anything. But there are times when you as a coach probably need to do that in your session. But there are times when you maybe need to recognize where you need to step in and guide, right? Back to the accordion. So I do think that that societal shift is definitely something that is maybe impacting what is going on in the environments. But I also think that our knowledge of how people learn and the fact that we potentially, we're working on this premise of transfer. So if we put players in environments where not only are the technical components there, but also the visual cues, like what I said way back about that game, you know, the 2v2 with the two end line players, you know, with playing a game like that, we are having to react to what my buddy does in terms of their movement, what the defender does in terms of their movement. We've also got to see the end line player. Yeah. So there's all these cues going on in the environment. And to your point, if we do build out the back, I think we maybe just want to get the ball over the halfway line. Well, yeah. Then the reality is that might then make players look down at the ground a little bit more or only see what's right in front of them. But really, the best pass at any time is the one that goes furthest forward, right? Because if we can get the ball up the field as quick as possible, well, depending on your game model, you know, that might be the best way to do it, like the old route one. But on that notion is if we set players up in situations that are reflective of pictures and images that they see in the game, we're getting a little bit more bang for our buck, if you know what I mean. Well, but we are 100%. Implicitly training our players to those cues. Now, how we get them to really see those cues is then how we coach, right? Can we give them some feedback and or ask them some questions to get them to understand that when a defender gets a bit closer to me, like in a 2v1, if you're too close and go more to one side and block off that pass, what should I do in this scenario? Well, I'm probably more likely that I should go dribble to the space and take my 1v1, right? So when things are going on in the environment, it gives you cues in order that you develop better decision-making because you know what to do when.
100%. And, you know, everything that you said there quite resonates with me quite a lot because I'm earlier on in my journey, probably the beginning stages of my journey, I was probably heavily focused on this, on the, you know, the isolated practice, the technical drill based kind of approach. And as time's gone on, I've completely shifted to the other end of the spectrum, because literally, as you put it there, I feel like we're going to get more bang for our buck. Now, the challenge for some coaches, I think, is recognizing that actually, because we can't recognize learning taking place, the easier thing to measure is, oh, well, we're doing something drill based. They've just knocked 150 repetitions of that, and it looks cleaner as they've gone through it. But obviously, when the context of the game comes back into it, it doesn't quite work like that, because obviously the variables that you're going to interact with, whether that be the opposition, whether that be your teammates or the space and whatnot, obviously will influence the decision making and the ability to perform certain techniques. So I've started to explore this piece around, well, actually, should there, you know, if we minimize and simplify the idea of a technical component of the game, whether it be passing, finishing, receiving, or whatever that might be, and link that to some of the biomechanical, I guess the physics in the motions, do we end up with a piece of a model or a framework of some sort, which leaves us with what we might consider to be objective technical considerations, i.e. this is a fact, this is not going to change, i.e. if I want to pass the ball to you and you're 10 yards in front of me in a straight line, I have to strike through the bracket of the ball to make that happen, versus that of I don't know if it's the correct word to use, but maybe a subjective technical component, which is, right, how am I going to do it? So it's not necessarily the part of the ball that is going to change, because that's the bit that stays consistent, but the part of the foot that I might use or the surface that I might use might then influence how I do it, but that's also then subsequently influenced by me as the individual and my biomechanics and my techniques and what might be comfortable for me in that moment. And I guess to bring it back to your practice of the 2v2 with the end zone players, something that I do quite a lot, because similar to what you've said, well, that's what's giving them the reference points of the game, you know, not necessarily always in the same way, but then going back to the, you know, that phrase of repetition without repetition, in a way that I would explain it to coaches, it's whatever happens, you're going to get a level of repetition. The question is, what do you want repetition of? Do you want repetition of the technical, or do you want repetition of the problem that you're going to deal with?
Well, you're probably getting a little bit of both, but you're right. Depending on how you set up the activity, how you set that up in terms of space and restrict space or open up space, that could affect what goes on in that situation, right? Whether it's longer and thinner or it's wider and shallower, you know, because obviously in one you've got more width, the other one you've got more height or length, and that's like then related to your developing an attacking shape where you have height, width and depth, you know, so it might be trying to emphasize certain things in the environment for the players, right?
But that's probably the crucial part, right? Because you talked earlier about the, you know, the concept of principles of play, and my viewpoint is quite heavy on the idea that, well, if we're going to do a practice and we really want to support the players and be able to effectively or more effectively, in my opinion, transfer that into what might be their game state, then surely the practices need to be relevant and align themselves to the principles of play, which an isolated technical practice may not necessarily do, because it doesn't have the contextual factors involved, right? Whereas even if something as simple as that 2v2 practice that you've mentioned there, yes, we might have a different game model, we might not want to go route one direct, but the concept of it is actually removing the ball from back to front, A to B, closer to your goal than my goal, and so on and so forth, and it becomes directional. So therefore, the subsequent decisions are going to be linked and aligned to that being the end goal, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, every principle of play, just to clarify, will probably have certain... when I use the term tactical problems, right? So if it's like finish the attack would be a tactical problem. So that comes with the fact that there are certain skills that we need, right? So one is shooting. Now we have various different techniques we can use, because to your point with passing, you've got outside of the foot, inside of the foot, you've got right foot, left foot, volley, header. I mean, even like chesting it in with your body, we say, you know what I mean? So, but there's different techniques to shoot the goal. Like, hard strike from the edge of the box, right? Side of the foot to tap it in. All the, you know, so there's a lot of things going on, again, even within that tactical problem, but that could be also related to principles of play. So, developing width or movement and support. There are different ways to support the ball, right? So we've got different cuts that we can use to get open. And so teaching players how to do that is obviously important, right? And recognizing which foot to play to and all this. So principles of play are good, right? But there'll be skills that maybe you want to emphasize a little bit more. And skills could be on the ball, off the ball, like scanning, moving, as well as obviously passing, dribbling, right? And things like that. And then you, like I say, within each skill, you've got various techniques, right, that you would want to use. So dribbling, the inside the foot, outside the foot, turns that you're going to use, right, to manipulate the ball. You know, but we're not, you know, the challenge is how do we develop those foot skills as well as, right? I mean, and we go back to, you know, if kids are playing different forms of the game, like futsal gives them maybe something different to, you know, playing indoors, maybe different from playing the outdoor kind of side. You know, we play this rink soccer in the US where the ball's always in. I don't know if you have those in England. So again, that will provide a different context for learning. But, you know, going back to everything, and I think that what we know from the teaching games for understanding literature, when we look at some of the studies that compared a teacher or a coach using TGFU and one using like a more traditional approach, in some of the early research, the skills and techniques of the kids that did the teaching games for understanding lessons were not any worse. Now, they weren't better, but they weren't any worse. But they're like, generally, they could answer questions better about what was going on in their environment. They had more knowledge about what was going on in the game. They made better decisions about what was going on in the game. So going back to the bang for the buck, it's kind of like, you know, doing more game-related practice, you know, might have more benefits than it has drawbacks, right? You know, because everything that we want to do in practice is about transfer. We want to have transfer to the game, right? Positive transfer. So if the more we're in situations and environment that are appropriately created by the coach to match a tactical problem that players need to solve, and we can guide them through it, the more we are going to potentially enhance learning, right? Which is the ultimate
just on that then, would you suggest, and again, this is just me thinking out loud, and partially maybe is a bit of bias in it based on my own approach as a coach, would you suggest that there's more or the need for a specific type of intervention? And in my opinion, that might be an inquiry through a Q&A approach. But would you say there's any recommendations, if that is the case, around what type of questions you'd maybe encourage encourage coaches to think about asking if this is the approach they're going to go with?
I mean, again, it would depend on where the players are at. I mean, there's a bit of a bad rap on inquiry-based learning, because it's the old saying, you don't solve problems by solving problems. In soccer terms, it's the game is the teacher. Well, the game isn't the teacher necessarily. The teacher's the teacher, or the coach is the teacher.
Yeah. Right?
And so, this idea that we're going to ask questions all the time, you know, we just maybe create a little bit more ambiguity with players than we do. That said, using a range of coaching behaviors, you know, just in time, and this is the silver bullet, right? It's like, oh, well, when should I ask a question? When should I tell someone what to do? Well, it's going back to the needs of the players, right? If someone makes a mistake, you could have a heuristic in your brain that if a player makes a mistake, and I saw someone do this when they were doing a TGFU session with me, we were co-teaching it, and this thing happened, and I said, oh, that would be a good time to reinforce this to the other coach. And he said, well, hang on a minute, let's not freeze the game here. Let's see if this situation happens again and the player can solve it.
Sure.
So that you've got
it's a really important piece though, because I was thinking just on that example that you've given there, like, and going back to your previous point about, you know, the game being a teacher, I think we might be aligned on this idea that actually the game can't be the teacher. Someone still needs to facilitate and guide the learning within the context of what's happening within the game, right? However, I guess one of the things I often share with coach and discuss with coach, and I have opinion on, is that how will you know what the right questions are to ask if you don't have enough understanding of the game in the first instance to recognize what might have influenced the individuals in the first place and in what ways they could have been influenced by those factors?
Yeah, and I think that this is a balance for a coach where you might know too much, right, and you might know too little. So if you don't know that much, you might not be able to step in, guide them through a particular situation. But also if you are working with younger players, you might have more complexity in what you're trying to do, and it might be overly complex and therefore be make it harder for them to figure out what you're trying to get them to figure out. But I think the notion is, if we've got some principles of like, think game like, right? Because ultimately we want transfer. And then to your point, how do we facilitate that? Well, we design activities that have some representativeness to the game based on what we want the players to achieve in relation to that principle of play or tactical problem or that particular game situation. And then the coaching behaviours thing is, again, what do players potentially need? Is it their first time learning about something? What I want to do is teach them cues. Well, they're not going to work cues out unless I teach them. I can teach them by asking questions, but I can also teach them by telling. And so again, that might be based on what you know about the individual players, what learning has come beforehand, how long you've been working with these players, where are you in the practice? Is it right at the start? You know, because you might not want to stop it. You might want to like let it go. And see how you go. It might be that if it's the first intervention, it's a little bit more tell. If it's something later, it might be, or you might flip it and say, well, it's the first intervention, so I'm just going to ask a question and then let them play and then get them to reflect on that question at the end of playing for a few minutes. Right, mm-hmm. I asked this question. Tell me what's going on in relation to that. So to go to some of the ways we can use questioning, that would be one, right, where you ask a question, they play, and then you come back to the question. Another way that I use questions is, you know, stop and then players come in. Sometimes I ask the small group or a group, give them a scaling question, and it might be, how are we going? Like, so if one of the things I'm trying to teach is, you know, even communication, I might say, how is our communication right now on a scale of one being not very good to 10 being it's awesome, it's the best it's ever been? The players might say, who thinks it's a 3? Right, who thinks it's 5? Right, why do you think it's a 3? Why do you think it's a 5? Right, so now we've got this. Well, is it really a 5? And things like that. But it's like the notion of that, right, when we go back and play again in this next 5 minutes, what are we going to do to get that 5 to a 6, not a 10? What are we going to do to get, right, well, we need to maybe talk to the player right next to me. Oh, that's a good strategy. I like it. So let's focus on that, right? So when you've got a player who's got the ball, if you're the closest player or the nearest, one of the nearest players, verbally communicate to them, right, that you're available or not available, right? Or do it, you know, using your... Oh, I mean, I saw a little clip of Declan Rice playing the other day, and he's always doing this. Basically, pass there or, you know, don't give it to me.
It's almost becoming a conductor, right?
Yeah. So you, there's this idea that I'm just going on communication. So that's one, the scaling question. The other way you could do it is using like what we do in the classroom, like turn and talk. So again, you might bring players in, yeah, and you might say, right, Stephen and you know, and partner, right, turn and talk to each other. This is the question, right? Tell me how we're going relative to our communication, right? Talk about that in your pairs. And then you might say, right, what did your pair come up with? What did your, right? So what's the big message here? And so this idea of, I mean, I'm just using the communication, which could be wishy-washy.
Of course.
But it could be certain things that are more specific. So those are a couple of ways. So turn and talks, you know, or think pair shares is another thing that it's called, are quite effective. The problem you've got is that these, when you bring players in, it can go on forever, and then people go, Well, I just wasted 5 minutes of my practice. So again, having this idea of knowing that, right, how long do I want this to last? So turn and talk's a very quick thing you can do. Obviously something where you're doing the scaling could be done quite quickly. Whereas if you ask an open question, how are we going in that activity? It could be a little bit less specific, and that might not guide the players to what it is that they need to do. But, you know, so you might have write down two or three questions that you want to ask before, and then think about what strategy you're going to use to ask that question. So is it a turn and talk? Is it you're going to ask that question and let them play through it and come back to it? Or is it that you're going to bring them in and ask a specific question, you know, through scaling? So those are just a couple, you know, a few different strategies or that you could use within questioning.
Yeah, no, I think it's really useful to kind of unpack that a little bit, because you're right, there is so many different ways to go about it. And I often, it's interesting, I was smiling as you were talking there, because a lot of what you said really resonates, especially the bit around, you know, maybe telling the players what you want to see from the get-go, because I think that's probably one of the challenges, right, when you're maybe going with a potential games-based approach, if you like, or some sort of teaching game for understanding kind of concept. It's even if there is, you know, an explorative piece for the players to kind of, you know, go through different scenarios within the context of the game, you almost still want to be able to direct what that is, because then it might bring their attention closer to those moments, not without influencing necessarily them away from that. But again, goes back to the piece we were talking about earlier. Can we encourage stuff? Because at the end of the day, we've still got a theme that we want to cover within that session, and that shouldn't go a wayside just because we're doing a certain level, a certain approach or a certain style of, I guess, delivery.
But you know, this is this, Shane Pill would talk about this notion of explicit teaching. So you can still be explicit with your teaching in a game-based approach, because to your point, you can still, without it being reductionist, right? Because, oh, I've decided what we're working on today and whatever, but our job is to sort of try and think about how we manipulate the environment in order to encourage the players to do certain things. The only thing I would say about the, hey, this is what we're working on today, is you might have the first 5, 7 minutes, 10 minutes of practice where it is play small-sided games and you don't say much, but then you say, you know, because you, especially if it's a slightly different game form, you know, even a 5v5 small games different from 4v4, but you, that's where they can explore, and then that relates to game appreciation, right? So you got an initial game form, you're trying to give them an opportunity to appreciate the game. So they're playing, they're getting an idea of what it is that you're wanting to do implicitly. So then the tactical awareness is when you come in and start asking a question, right? As we're playing, what happened at the weekend, right? This happened the weekend, right? So I want you to think about this while we're playing, right? Go. You see what I mean? Or even pose them a question, right? How can we do X? And then they play again, right? And so as you can think about it, you maybe start with a general funnel where it's all the way out, and then you sort of try and funnel them into that concept or that you want to teach through that session. And then the skills that are technical skills that are required to help them solve that more tactical problem, right? So it works as a bit of a funnel, and so your behavior will change. It might funnel in and then it might funnel back out, right? Where then you get to a situation where they're playing a game and you are still going to intervene when needed, but it's not as maybe many interventions as you would have done in when they're in that guided practice phase. You see what I mean? Just trying to point out. So again, this has been a little bit more deliberate with your coaching behavior. I mean, Chris Cushion, a colleague of mine, I mean, I'm name dropping here, but he sort of, one easy thing for coaches other than thinking game like is to carry a stopwatch. And so if you're talking, you hit the stopwatch, and when you're not talking, you hit the stopwatch, right? And you get an idea of, right, in that 40 minutes of, oh, sorry, 60 minutes, 75 minutes of coaching, I was talking for 30 minutes. So maybe I can reduce that. And it's, again, not trying to get it to zero. It's, right, I'm thinking back and reflecting on how much I was talking. So maybe I want to reduce it by 5 minutes, but you also need to know, well, why do I need to reduce it, or what was going on where there's a need to reduce it? So there are things that people can do without any like technology to, well, stopwatches technology, but it's pretty cheap, right?
Yeah, 100%. And I think that reflective piece is really important, because ultimately, you know, and a provocative question I've started asking a lot of coaches, well, how do you know what you're doing is working? So it's like, can you be more deliberate and intentional in those actions and those reflections on your actions, right? Because ultimately, if I am spending X amount of time talking to the players, this doesn't necessarily, you know, determine it to be a positive or a negative thing. However, we want to better understand, well, what was the subsequent action, you know, the subsequent response or the consequence of that intervention or that question or that that intervention, if you like. And I think that's where the coaches can probably gain more value from that. Is there a, you know, is there a correlation, or is there a an outcome that they're, a trend or a pattern that they're noticing in that actually when my interventions are X long or not, this is the outcome I'm typically seeing. But also within that, recognizing, going back to context, how many sessions a week have you got? How long have you got them for? Because actually the way in which you structure that session might be game based, but it might be in intervals. So therefore you might decide, actually, you might have a higher element of talking, but because the intensity of the practice is being performed at a higher level, you might have to then use that time to intervene and almost bring them back down before they go again, almost kind of like a high intensity interval type approach, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's, like I say, a lot of things here. I mean, I'm trying to get it to a situation where, you know, if you're a coach, the question is, like, at the end of our conversation is, well, what was the point of me listening for the last 60 minutes to the conversation? It was a good conversation, but what am I going to do? But the idea is, we want players, I guess, to have an experience to play and play the game within practice. But the thing about practice that's different from Jumpers for Goalposts is that you are there as the coach. So maybe can you be the person that helps guide that practice, if you know what I mean, in order that they can get the best out of that situation, you know. But there are benefits of, you know, if we think about the notion of transfer again, you know, what we are trying to do is put them in situations that they're going to see a little bit more in the game. Again, on the hypothesis or the premise that there's some implicit learning going on if they're in that, right, where it's unintended even or whatever. But there's also explicit learning going on because you're guiding them to, hey, this is a situation that I want us to understand a bit more, get a little bit better at, right? And I am going to have to, if I'm taking a bit more of a thematic approach, I am going to have to, Bruner had this idea of a spiral curriculum. So this idea that I'm going to teach you this concept, but I'm going to come back to it in a couple of weeks. And this relates to also a concept of interleaving. So you teach them something, then you go on and teach something else, and you come back to the something you taught them or were trying to teach them and revisit it. And you can also heighten the complexity of that, right? Mm-hmm. And this idea that you're going through this, you know, spiral. I mean, we're adults, and the old saying is, I'm always learning, right? I'm a lifelong learner. I mean, players are never done learning.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, we hear all the time, a new Premier League manager or a new manager takes over a team, and a player comes out and says, oh, the manager's teaching us new concepts and new things, right? So, because we all have different things that we're trying to encourage. We're not all the same person. We don't have everything that we know. So I think you know, there are some challenges as well, like for coaches, because again, if you're indoor, you might want to think, well, how can I make practices game-like if I don't have a lot of space? So that requires that you think about your organization of your activities, how you can get players in and out quickly, and things like that, if you want to play games, because space and then the amount of time you have for practice is an issue, right?
So yeah, how do you, principle stuff, right?
Yeah, so how do you balance how much they get to play versus how much you try and intervene and do your thing? And then obviously, as you say, the expertise of the teacher or the coach. And we've got to understand, if you're going to start trying to be a little bit more game-like, it's going to take you a while to get better, right? And so hopefully you will have someone in your club or someone that you know who can maybe come and observe you, give you a bit of feedback. You could even video yourself, right? Or at least carry your stopwatch. So you're getting a little bit of feedback for yourself as you go along. I mean, you can also get feedback from the players, right? How was that session? What did you like about it? What were some of the things that, you know, I would need to do better? Do you see what I mean? Because I think that that's an understated thing as well. We don't probably give players an opportunity to do that. I know I'm sort of ranting here, but it made me think. Alan Launder had a concept of enhancing play as well. And so a thing that I do is if I have had situations where my players sometimes are not, seemingly dealing with something well, I might put them in that situation in practice. So it might be, we're 2-1 down with 10 minutes left to play, right? So I've got these situation cards that whenever we encounter a situation, so say the opposing player gets sent off, so we're playing against a team with, one less player, 9v9, so it's 9v8 or whatever. I have these scenario cards, and I saw a volleyball coach do this, and you can create these scenario cards, and the end game that you play in practice could be like a specific scenario, right? Mm-hmm. And you have them play through that scenario. And this is one way of trying to, encourage players to take a little bit more ownership of, hey, you're on the field when this situation's going on. I'm not. But in practice, we can guide them through these situations that come up, right? It's 0-0 and there's 10 minutes left to play. It's, from both sides of the ball, right? We want to be playing away, we want to keep it tight, things like that. So there are ways in which we can simulate, hopefully, some match day scenarios for players outside of, we're trying to teach you how to build out of the back. You see what I mean?
Yeah, because the context of it might be playing out from the back, but what does it look like when you're 2-0 down with 10 minutes to go versus 1-0 up with 10 minutes to go? Do you know what I mean? So I think those contextual variables definitely are going to play a key part. And I think the key takeaway for me there for coaches to think about is how specific can we be on what we're actually trying to work on, rather than generalizing this as a overall theme. Actually, what's the context of the situation that we want to explore linked to that theme?
Yeah. And I think another thing, I mean, to sort of get to the close here, I guess we're going to have to close off, but you know, this idea of what's the one thing that I can do in my coaching moving forward to be a little bit more game-like. It might be, well, I'm going to start, you know, if I'm working with really young players, it's I'm going to start practice with a game or a game form. It might be you don't want to start with a game form, so it might be I'm going to try and in the middle of practice, I'm going to try and design an activity that is a little bit more game representative than maybe what I would do normally, right? Or I have been. You see what I mean? Because I'm defaulting to being. So you could set yourself as a coach just very simple targets as you know, because sometimes moving to like a more game-based approach can be a bit of a challenge. So we've got to do what we do normally in learning is think of like, well, what are some baby steps, right? If I'm already using a game-based approach, it might be, well, how can I enhance my players' learning? So it might be that that's where I am going to think about, well, I'm going to ask more questions. I'm going to use more strategies to get players involved talking to each other. You see what I mean? Rather than me telling them what to do. You see what I mean? So for coaches listening, you know, there might be some strategies that they could take. If they're totally like, I don't even know how to use a game-based approach, it might be, you know, I need some more resources to read about it. Obviously, they can go to the FIFA session that I presented and have a listen to that.
I'll definitely include that in the show notes as well. Stephen, I'm conscious of time as well. It's been a really, really insightful conversation, and I think it's definitely given me some food for thought, reaffirmed some things for me, and I guess giving me some ideas on how I might not just utilize this in my own practice, but also encourage the exploration of this for coaches that I work with as well. So again, massive thank you for your time. I don't know if there's any final points that you want to leave with the coaches.
I mean, nothing really. I would definitely encourage them to, reach out if they have any questions, but also, go to that FIFA thing that we'll put in the show notes, because that gives, a little bit more, you know, there's an activity set up for a game-based session that they can look at and get kind of a little bit of a better picture than listening to us, right, on a podcast. There's some more visual information on there. So. And then, you know, I can also put them onto a couple of resources that they can maybe follow.
100%. Yeah, no, that'd be really appreciated. And if you could send those across, then I can get those included in the notes as well. Again, Stephen, really appreciate your time. I'm finally pleased to have got this done, and hopefully can connect again soon.
Right. Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at The Coaches Network or on Twitter at The Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.